Mike Thinks News for the week of May 17th. Nothing good's come of the internet anyway. Thanks News. I am your host, Mike James. Hey, thank you so much for downloading and listening to the show. As always, I truly do appreciate it. Don't forget to check out the website over at thinksmedia.com, where you'll find Mike Thanks News as well as a bevy of other content, including Newscast Live, Let's Watch Movies. There's all kinds of stuff over there. Just head on over to thinksmedia.com. And if you're an old diehard, yeah, you can still go over to mikethinksnews.com. Now, some of you have noticed that the feed on iTunes was a little, what's the best word to put, irregular this week? Yeah, it was. I was beating on the server all weekend. We were having a little bit of a problem getting the feed corrected, and then I edited a file on the server and just completely hosed over everything. That's all fixed. So, it only took me 45 minutes to find a one space error in a PHP file. That's right. There was a single solitary space in a PHP file where there could not be one, and that completely took down the entire Thinks Media site. Now, the site was up, but all the feeds and all the backdoor content was missing. So I really appreciate you sticking through me with that. And, we have got just a ton of great news stories for you this week. So let's get right to it and move on to the news. The first story this week, I got this off of PCAuthority.com, and this is out of Australia. It's the top 10 disappointing technologies, and it's a list of different technologies, and they list a couple of them like FireWire. You know, they just never really went anywhere. The Apple Lisa, which was just a really high-priced computer way back in the day. But the one I want to touch on is voice recognition. Of course, we'll link up to this story in our show notes over at thinksmedia.com in the Mike Thinks News section. But voice recognition, you know, we always hear about voice recognition. Every year or so, something comes up, and it's kind of a dream. You know, you watch the old sci-fi movies, and people are just talking to their computers. And we've touched on this on the show before, and they have an interesting take on it. My take on voice recognition has always been that it works well enough for most people. If you have a generic enough accent, or if the program is, of course, programmed for the accent that you typically would use, you know, voice recognition might work fine for me, but it isn't going to work for somebody who maybe talks a little bit like this, because that's where they grew up. And there's nothing wrong. And there's all thousands and tens of thousands of people who talk like that. But the voice recognition software will get confused by that. Just like it would get confused by somebody with maybe a British accent that has a very soft sound to some of their consonants. The big thing about voice recognition is I think the implementation has always been a little off. You know, voice recognition is great if it's done correctly, and it works well if it's done in limited circumstances. You know, when you're on these voice automated systems on the telephone, they annoy the crap out of me, basically because it's easier to press 1, 2, or 3. You know, and in case you didn't notice, big hint, if you're on an automated system and it starts saying, you know, for English, you know, say English. If you want Spanish, say Spanish. The first choice is always 1, second choice, as it gives you things, you can just press the number associated with whatever number option it gave you. I do that because, honestly, it's just easier than repeating myself. And I have, as you may understand, a fairly easy to understand dialect. I have a very standard, they call it a Midwest accent. I don't have a real heavy accent. So I can only imagine how frustrating it must be for some people. The real problem with voice recognition is the same problem you have with things like Bluetooth headsets. Do you really want a world where people are just randomly talking to nobody? Because not only is it distracting and confusing, they just look weird. Don't they? I mean, honestly, you know, when I'm in here making my podcast, my wife knows what I'm doing, right? But when I first started doing the show years ago, she would occasionally pop in and go, "What?" Because I'd be talking about something and she'd think I was talking to her. So that's the real problem with voice recognition. There's a place for it, but I think that companies are trying to shoehorn it in where it just doesn't belong. Tell me what you think. Call the voicemail hotline, 347-284-6453. That's 347-BUG-MIKE, the most fun phone number in podcasting. Or, of course, you can send me an email, mikethinks@gmail.com. Now, we do have to take just a brief moment out and head on over to our sponsor, GoToMeeting. Anytime I can avoid getting into my car and driving to a meeting, I do. That's why I started using GoToMeeting to hold my meetings online instead of wasting time and money sitting in traffic. GoToMeeting has become absolutely indispensable to me. You know, if you've listened to this show for a while, you've heard about the GoToMeeting meetings that we go to when we want to talk about tech. The tech podcast roundtables, you know, that would be impossible if it wasn't for GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting's perfect for sales presentations, training sessions, product demos. Plus, it's affordable. Just $49 a month, you can hold as many meetings as you want, and it includes phone and voiceover IP conferencing. I want you to sign up for GoToMeeting today and have your first meeting tomorrow. You can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days, but you must visit GoToMeeting/podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/podcast for a free trial. And now, let's move on to a little science news. This story comes off of Fox News. You guys have, and ladies, pardon me, have all been, you've been listening to what's going on in the shuttle, right? The shuttle goes up there and it's going to fix the Hubble telescope. I'm stoked that that we're going up to do this. Did you hear about the problems they had? Yeah, they had a real issue today trying to get a bolt loose. You know, it's not an easy thing to work on something in space. Any of you who have ever worked on a car or other piece of equipment down here on good old Mother Earth can attest to the fact that sometimes it's just hard to get things done. Can you imagine doing it wearing a spacesuit in zero? It's phenomenal to me to think that they can that they do this. But they ended up with a stuck bolt. And I guess you can't just spray it with WD-40. I guess that just doesn't work in space. But you know it does work? Forcing it. Yeah, that's what they ended up doing. They ended up forcing it. Now, it put them a little behind schedule, apparently. But I was reading this story, and it's remarkable to me when I'm reading here. The astronaut had to take out 111 screws to get some panel up. Who designed this? This is the same guy who designed the dashboard on my car. I remember, you know, when I had a car a couple of years ago, and I wanted to change out something in the stereo or something, and you had to take the dash off to get to it, and it's like you needed 15 different tools to get the front plate of the dash off. Same person designed the Hubble. I know they didn't intend for it to be up there that long, and I understand that, but is this the best engineering we can do? 111 little screws to get an access panel open? Anyway, they're doing a great job, so hopefully we'll go ahead and we'll get the Hubble back up and running in the next couple days. You know, it's very special where they are right now because they have to have that second shuttle on the launch pad because they're so high up that they don't have any chance of getting to the space station for a safe harbor if something went wrong. That's why they got the second space shuttle on the pad right now, just in case. Now, we also got a great story here off of Science Daily about the brain's organization and how it changes from child to adulthood. And, you know, we've talked about similar things in the past. Now, one of the things the story alludes to is that your child thinks differently from you, but then it kind of hedges its bet and it says, you know, once a kid's about 7 years old, their brains are pretty much organized just like yours. But one key difference that they did find was that a child's brain's networking, the way it tends to connect information, is much more reliant on the physical proximity of the two areas of the brain than anything else. It'll very quickly associate things in parts of the brain that happen to lie next to other parts of the brain, as opposed to parts of the brain that would be a little divergent, but still make more sense to be connected. You know, this is one of the reasons that as we age, a lot of times the fact that our thought processes are a little slower than they were when we were younger. You know, when you're, 50 years old, you're not thinking as quick as you were when you were 25. But experience has let you make connections that maybe the 25-year-old hasn't fully developed yet or isn't as good at exploiting. And so you're able to compensate for the fact that you're thinking a little slower because you're thinking a little more efficiently. Well, this is what happens in young kids is they can make some of these connections, but they're much more apt at making a connection if the two brain areas are adjoining each other. And that is why some of the differences come in and how kids perceive the world and how they basically think about things. You know, it's amazing, being a parent, you can see your child's thought process. And I remember when I was a kid and I had no idea, when you're a kid, you don't realize just how much your parents know. You really do associate people according to your own experience. You think, well, this is what I would know, so that must be what they would know. I found over the years, it is very difficult to put yourself in a position of assuming another person thinks better than you, because it's very hard to understand what they would know giving the same set of information if they're smarter than you. It's hard to put yourself in that position. But I do remember being a kid, and I do remember saying things that at the time I thought were completely plausible fabrications. And looking back, I can only realize that my parents were looking at me, shaking their heads and thinking, "You can't honestly think I'm going to believe that crud, do you?" So kids, yeah, your parents know. Now, let's move on to a little more unusual news. This story comes off of networkworld.com, although it is all over the internet. Did you get one of these annoying robot calls saying that your car warranty was going to expire? I didn't, but apparently a lot of people did. And in fact, I may have gotten the call and just not taken it because I don't take calls on my cell phone from people that I don't know. So it's possible that maybe I didn't. I just ignored it. Some people got so upset, they actually started calling the company back and rickrolling them, playing the Rick Isley song, "Never Gonna Give You Up," that thing. Yeah. So anyway, but the Federal Trade Commission's gotten involved and they are shutting this place down. They're moving very quickly. They're trying to not only block the outgoing calls, but they're trying to get indictments against the principals in not only the company that's running the call scheme, but also the company that's buying the service, Transcontinental Warranty. Apparently, it's just like the worst spam scheme ever, except it's on your phone. They're calling you up and telling you, "Hey, your car warranty is about to expire." And from what the complaint alleges, they're just calling numbers. I mean, they'll just dial your phone number, 954-555-1212, 954-555-1213, and 1214, and 1215. And they'll just tell you your car warranty is expiring. They don't even know if you own a car. So, high pressure tactics, very deceptive practices by their sales associates from the complaint here. Basically, just overall something that they have to lock down. And this is one of those things that I cannot believe in this day and age that it didn't get locked down even quicker than that. Did you get one of these calls? Man, it would annoy the living crud out of me if I did, because I got some calls from Hilton. I believe some of you have listened to the show for a while. Remember that Hilton was running some kind of a callback scheme, trying to get you to sign up for a rewards program or something. And they basically were hitting my phone once, twice a week, annoying the heck out of me. So tell me, did you ever get any of these calls? Give me a call, 347-BUG-MIKE. I did get a voicemail this week, another one from Alec.
Hey, Mike, this is Alec. I was just wondering, what's your opinion on the new OnLive gaming system? The console that's supposed to just hook up to the internet and stream. Do you think it's going to take off or fail? Just wondering. All right.
Well, thank you so much again for the call, Alec. Hey, that's 2 weeks in a row. You know, Alec is putting the rest of you guys to shame. Anyway, you know, Alec, that new streaming video game system, if you guys aren't familiar with what he's talking about, there's a new system that was displayed at, I don't remember if it was CES or the Entertainment Expo or one of the recent trade shows. And the idea is that you don't need a real super powerful computer to play the latest and greatest video games. They're going to use a great big server somewhere to run the game on that big server farm. And all you need is a fast enough internet connection so that they can stream the video of what's going on in the game. Because really, when you're playing a game, think about it. All you're just looking at a screen. It's just like watching a movie, right? So if we can stream a movie, why not stream your game? Well, the problem, of course, comes down to bandwidth. And if you've played any online games, you know about lag, the time it takes between when you do something and when the server and the other people playing the game with you see you do that. Nowadays, lag is measured, we still measure it in milliseconds, but it's usually somewhere between 75 and 150 milliseconds is considered an acceptable connection. And basically, 150, that's like 0.15 seconds. So round trip, that's like a third of a second. If you can do it in that amount of time, you can just about eliminate the feeling of lag. It's just barely enough. I'd love to see this this system work. There's a couple hindrances I see. First of all, there's not enough high-speed connections out there to support it. It would be doable in a very limited way in a very limited area. You know, if you lived in a major metropolitan area, this service will probably work if they have servers in your area. The other real problem I see is the bandwidth that they're able to use is only enough to get you a resolution of, they're calling it HD resolution, which sounds really good until you realize that's only about, 1,250 lines across by 700 lines down, maybe 1024 lines down. My native resolution on my computer monitor is 1920 by 1600. That's four times the resolution of what they're talking about. So, or at least three times. I mean, I just don't think that we have the bandwidth yet, and I don't think that the gaming experience is going to be quite enough. I think it's probably about 5 years too early, but I love the idea. I think it's going to be one of those disappointing technologies. I don't think it's ever going to come out. At least in this form. I think this delivery, this one that we saw, basically is not actually going to happen. I hate to say that, but that's where we are. Those of you who have been listening to the show for 2 or 3 years know that my actual track record for predicting technologies like this, spot on. I am in the 99 percentile. Ask me about the Optimus keyboard someday. Now, let's go ahead and move on to a little internet news. Yeah, tying great in with that last call there from Alec. Let's move on to the internet news. This story came off Gizmodo.com, but I've seen it all over the place. And have you heard about Sony's earnings report? Yeah, Sony's earnings came out last week, and they're bleeding money. They are hemorrhaging cash at an outstanding rate. And the problem is that they're just losing all kinds of money, particularly in their games division. You know, the PlayStation 3 is just losing money hand over fist. I think that there might be a little bit of a problem in upper management at Sony, because Sony Pictures CEO Michael Lynton actually was quoted, and you know, we've heard all kinds of quotes. You know, it's fun to make fun of quotes because it's a little snapshot in time. Everybody makes fun of that Bill Gates quote, 640K is enough for anybody. But that was made at a time when 640K was enough for anyone. How about this quote from the CEO of Sony? This is a brand new quote. "I'm a guy who doesn't see anything good having come from the internet. Period." Let me repeat that quote. "I'm a guy who doesn't see anything good having come from the internet, period." Anybody else wonder why Sony's having problems? Oh, man, I mean, talk about just missing the boat. Yeah, you know, I was much happier when we didn't have this internet thing. It was a much better... I don't know where he's coming from. I don't know how you could even consider saying that that was taken out of context. I don't see anything in period. I mean, that's this is why you shouldn't talk in absolutes, I think. So anyway, let's go ahead and let's move on to a little geeky tech news. All right, this story comes off of Tech Dirt. There's a college who is threatening students who use email addresses that contain the college's initials. Now, as I've said before, I am not a lawyer. I don't even pretend to be a lawyer. But I do know a stupid idea when I hear one. And, Santa Rosa Junior College is sending threats to anyone who uses an email address with SRJC in them. For example, joesmithsrjc@gmail.com. Claiming that somehow this is a violation, that you're using their name without their permission. Now, first of all, SRJC is not your name, okay? Let's just start out there. There are probably other things with those initials, okay? I know that from a legal standpoint, you might be able to state that SRJC is something that would be immediately confused with the college. The question is, why are we sending out these nasty emails to students who are using this email address instead of, let's say, their official one that they get at the college that ends in santarosa.edu? I'm confused. I'm of two minds here. I don't think that it's perfectly legitimate to be just putting your initials on initials like that on an email if you have no association with the college. However, if you're going to that college, or if you're an alumni of that college, I see absolutely nothing wrong with identifying yourself as so in your email address. Another way of looking at this. How many of you have ever called in to a podcast? I know Alec has, I know John has. I mean, we get lots of calls. Like my other show, I get lots of calls from a Let's Watch Movie show. And people very often will identify themselves with a name and where they're calling from. And the reason they do that is they don't want to give their full name out. So they'll go, hey, this is Jeff from Santa Rosa. Hey, this is Mary from Upper Chicago. Whatever the case may be. Are we going to start saying that that's wrong too? Because what if they're giving an opinion that Chicago doesn't agree with? I know. I think that the college really should take a very careful look at this policy, especially since they say they're not actually going to sue anybody. Well, then why send out the letters? Why threaten someone if you're not really? I mean, it's a faceless, baseless threat. Tell me what you think. Send me an email. MikeThinks@gmail.com. And in our last story today, this one comes off of ArsTechnica.com. Intel is looking at about a $1.45 billion fine by the EU. The European Union has been pretty, what's the word I want to use? Aggressive? Exuberant? I don't know how you want to look at it. They've been going after Intel and Microsoft pretty heavy. They go after big companies a lot there. And I have to think that a lot of it has to do with a little bit of, let's just say, malice towards the United States, and that these are two, U.S.-based firms. Intel, however, they have done things, and we all pretty much have in our minds, and I hate to put, thoughts into your head, but tell me you don't believe this if you've been around for a while. Some of you are a little young. You probably don't, have enough experience with this. But those of you that have been around for a while that remember the 1990s, early 90s, how many of you honestly believe that Intel didn't pay money to computer manufacturers to keep them from using competitors' chips? How many of you don't believe that Intel threatened computer makers and computer manufacturers if they used competitors' chips. I will tell you right now, I don't believe for a nanosecond that Intel did not do that. I know they did. With every fiber of my being, I know that they did this. I've talked to people in the industry, and they have said that they can't come out with the Cyrix part. They couldn't come out with the part made by AMD because Intel didn't want them to, that all of their production was dedicated to Intel. And they did it in a couple sneaky ways, but sometimes it was pretty darn blatant. And I think where this really reached ahead, you know, the EU suit is going from the year 2002 to 2005, but this took place a long time before, too. Many of you may not remember, Cyrix came out with some chips back in the early days of the Pentium. They weren't as fast as the Intel chips, but they were close. And the good thing about them is they were a whole lot cheaper. You know, I owned nothing but off-brand chips for many, many years. Once I moved out to the Pentium class chip, once I got out of the 486 line, I moved into non-Intel chips, and I bought exclusively non-Intel chips until just last year. Last year is the first time that I've actually bought a computer with an Intel CPU. I now have three of them in my house just over the past couple of years. That's what I've bought. And the reason is that we've reached a point now where Intel is the only smart choice. If you know, for what I needed, my laptop has a dual core Intel chip because the AMDs just suck too much power. They, you know, the battery life wouldn't be as good. And my desktops have Intel CPUs because the AMD chips just aren't as fast. You know, I've got a quad core Intel chip in my computer, and there was just not a comparable AMD chip when I bought it. But that hasn't always been the case. You know, 3 or 4 years ago when I was buying a computer, you know, my second computer that sits on my desk here, my backup system, that has an AMD chip. It has one of those Athlon FX chips in it. I think it runs at 38. It's an Athlon 3800, 3.8 gigahertz or something like that. I don't know. It's a fast chip. I don't remember what it is. But at the time when I bought it, it was faster than the Intel chip and almost all benchmarks. There were only a couple benchmarks where Intel would win. And apparently, Intel worked very hard to make sure that people like me couldn't get that AMD chip easily. You know, and I do remember you used to have to work a lot harder to find the computer you wanted with the non-Intel chip. It really upsets me when I think that I've got to depend on the European Union to keep companies from practicing like this. You know, this isn't just something that happened over in Europe. I know that this was going on here in the United States for a decade or more. And, you know, the thing about, you know, people complain about Microsoft and, you know, and they are basically all that there is. You really don't have a heck of a lot of choice when it comes to operating systems because operating systems need to run the programs. And when all the programs are written for that operating system, you as a consumer, you don't have a choice. I don't care what you say. You know, Linux is not an option right now for anything except for an internet device. And yeah, hey, you know, I'm going to buy probably a netbook in the next couple months. And that netbook will definitely probably be Linux-based because all I needed to do is run Skype and the internet. And those are great. You can get those on Linux. But if you want to run regular mainstream programs, you've got to have Windows. And yes, all you Mac fan people, that's fine. You've got your Apple stuff. But guess what? You can't run about 90% of the programs out there. I mean, now you can, because I think your Macs will run the Windows stuff, because your Macs are on Intel chips now. But honestly, you cannot compare, because there is no difference in functionality between an Intel chip and an AMD chip, or an Intel chip and a Cyrix chip, or an Atom chip. You know, all these processors are going to run the same. You're going to be able to run your software. It is not like the operating system, and it just really, really toasts my crunchies to think that they've gotten away with it this long, and that really, 1.45 billion sounds like a lot, But, you know, even just alleging their claims of between 2002 and 2005, I just don't think it's enough. That's what I think. Tell me what you think. Call the voicemail hotline 347-BUG-MIKE. Or, of course, you can send me an email, mikethinks@gmail.com. As always, I do appreciate each and every one of you listening to the show, telling your friends, your neighbor, helping the show grow. Head on over to thinksmedia.com for all the links to the stories I talked about today and Mike Thinks News and all the other shows I do. Until next time, I hope everyone has a good one.